From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment, the home edition. I'm Elvis Mitchell, and we have a couple of guests, one of whom has been here before. I want to make sure I'm pronouncing the name right. It's Sam Levinson, right?
Correct, yeah.
He was last here with his film Assassination Nation. His new film, as writer-director, is Malcolm Marie. We're joined here by his star, and I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this right. It's Netflix, right? His star is Zendaya. See, thank you so much for joining us here, too.
Of course. Thank you so much for having us.
So much to talk about, but I guess I should start with, for me, and I'll start with you, Z. You working with Sam, I mean, between playing Rue and now doing Marie, you playing a couple of characters who are kind of in the present and not really there at the same time. Basically, these are people with kind of two states of mind simultaneously. And I just wonder if that's something you guys talk about as you're developing character together.
Well, wait, what do you mean by there, but also not at the same time? I mean, I understand that for Rue, but what do you think it is about Marie that has, that she's present, but not present?
Because first of all, she's waiting a long time to speak. I think it's about 5 or 6 minutes before she actually really says anything in the movie. And there's a part of her that seems to be present, but also that's really because she has to be in the present to kind of concentrate on maintaining, but also like looking out, you know, so she's looking at herself in the same time. And I guess I was reminded of Rue in the watching of that.
It might in some way, I think, mirror our working relationship in some way, I guess, it just in the sense that as I got to know Z through shooting Euphoria, I realized like how just unbelievably talented she is at everything. And so I think there's something so fascinating about that as a character, where Marie comes in and she's in this amazing dress and you can't really read her. You don't know what she's thinking. And slowly throughout the course of the movie, she sort of unfolds until you realize that she is the true kind of center of the universe in terms of this film.
Me and Sam, it's interesting because every time we get to talk to different people who've seen the movie, we kind of learn more about it in a strange, you know, because, you know, we were actually talking about this yesterday. I think, you know, this movie was kind of made with just really, you know, the sheer pursuit of wanting to try things and wanting to see what we can do and how creative we can be. And that's really all it kind of is. And so when you live inside of it, sometimes it's different, you know, and it's been interesting to kind of see different people's takeaways and what they notice within the material that I think sometimes we didn't even maybe weren't as aware of or had our own different opinion of what that might have looked like. So it is fascinating to think about. I guess that's why I'm a little bit trying to figure out how to answer that question, because it's a new kind of thought or idea. I mean, I always thought that, you know, Marie coming into that house, I always felt that she knew exactly how she wanted the night to play out. And I think, you know, Sam and I had kind of talked in the beginning about the character and about how we saw her. And I think one of the things that was interesting was we always talked about her being a little bit unpredictable. You never really know what she's thinking. And that helps, I think, the overall suspense and tension that kind of helped us sustain however long of just two people talking, you know, in a house, because you never really know what Marie is going to do and what she's going to say. And I think there's something about that is interesting. And you can't, like Sam's saying, you can't always read her. And I think in the beginning, my thought always about Marie was she knew that she was going to start an argument. She didn't know how long it was going to go, what it was going to turn into, but something was going to be said that night. And I think even when she comes in and she has like this attitude about her, you know, she's just waiting for him to notice that something's wrong. And even when she says, you know, I don't want to fight, I don't want to talk about it, you know, bullshit. Yeah, she does. She does. Yeah. You know, there's quite a big part of her that's like, I just please ask me what's wrong because I'm ready to tell you, you know. And you like, again, you know, there's a lot of moments where you're like, oh, they're good. And then, you know, you come back and she's decided she's not okay with something again, you know. And that to me, I think is the fascinating part about Marie. because I guess I'm a bit different from her in that regard. You know, I found it difficult to transition from, okay, well, now she's sad and now she's angry so quickly. And I know there's this one part where she goes from literally crying to screaming at him. And I always was like, how is that going to read? You know, but that is the character, you know, she can go from opening up her heart to him and being very vulnerable to screaming about how, you know, how much more authentic she is than him. You know, that is how Marie functions, which is, you know, it's different than I function. She's doing her own thing, really. I don't know. I had to kind of go for the ride a bit with her.
Well, there's one thing for me that really kind of encapsulates all the things we're talking about, and it's that love scene when In a Sentimental Mood is playing, and there's an intensely physical scene, obviously, but it's almost like Marie is, again, standing over it, commenting on Malcolm's life, on her life, on what his future life is going to be like without her. I mean, that to me is really fascinating because you create tension at the very beginning of the movie, Sam, by not having her say anything for a long time. And then at a certain point she says, I love you, I know you, and you can't de-escalate, which, you know, we can read those as fighting words pretty easy.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's interesting. Z and I were having this conversation last night because I think this is the first time that we're actually looking at the film from like an outside perspective and trying to kind of unpack it. But I think what was happening was when I sat down to write it, we didn't have any of the bells and whistles of production. So it was like, can we tell a story with two characters in this house? And I essentially just wrote, it's kind of like this strange Socratic dialogue between the two with no structure or act breaks or anything. But I wanted to make sure that there was always a tension to the piece that could keep people engaged. And I think that was the challenge. Can we keep people engaged? And so Marie not being forthright about how she feels at the beginning gives an unease to Malcolm's whole sort of celebration within the house, where he's like toasting imaginary people and talking about how well his film was received. And you know that something's coming. And I agree with Z that she knows where it's going to go. She knows they're going to get into a fight. But I think she's waiting. She's plotting for the right moment. She wants him to ask, and then she'll finally reveal it. But she also doesn't want to give away all of her cards, you know, at the same time. She wants to make sure that he can slip up again, and then she can hit him with the next part of it. So it's not just he forgot to thank her, but he forgot to thank her in a movie that was also based on her.
It's the treatment, by the way, we're talking to Sam Levinson, who's the writer-director of Malcolm and Marie, and his star Zendaya. And I guess I was bringing this up too because let's look at it this way. When you have people walk into a house looking that glamorous, and one of them isn't speaking, the other one's kind of all over the place, you're already creating a kind of tension because we want to hear seeing people be that buttoned up and that formal, we want to hear what they're going to be like when they relax. And also, too, there's just this really interesting aspect of a kind of a constant tension. And you said there were no act breaks, Sam, but it's really like the act breaks comes when there are these emotional shifts. I mean, that's what takes us, you know, from one part of the story to another, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, and I think that's just the nature of the process of writing it, which was I would write during the day and then I'd call Z and I'd read it to Z aloud on the phone. And I always wanted to leave her with like a cliffhanger. Like, wait, how's Marie going to get out of this? Like, you know, Marie can't come back from the things she just said, you know, or wait, Marie's cheated on him. How are we going to, and everyone's going to hate her now. And I go, well, just wait. And it was sort of, I think part of it was, how can we dig these characters into a hole and then find our way out in the next scene? And that was really the entire structure of the movie, and constantly allow it to sort of evolve in the sense that what they're arguing about further illuminates not just their relationship, but this film that he made about essentially her and its themes and its ideas as a way to even further investigate the more subconscious aspects of their relationship.
And so I want to ask you too, because again, as he was reading you stuff and he's working the script out early on, you guys are working out this stuff together, obviously. What was it like for you to not speak for so long? When you do speak, it's just responses. You're not really having conversation. Do you want salted or unsalted butter? Or, I mean, you're not giving anything away for maybe the first, I didn't count, but 7 or 8 minutes of the movie. And I wonder if for you, that was the way you thought to approach her, just because we're waiting to hear when and how she's going to enter the conversation with Malcolm.
I think a lot is being said in that beginning part. And I think a lot of specifically Malcolm's rants don't just serve as, you know, hearing what he's saying, but also kind of as devices to better understand how their relationship works. And so when they come in, even though she's not saying anything, what we get from all of that is, you know, well, we clearly see that two people had two different, very, very different nights. One had a good night. One is drinking. One is not drinking. Why isn't she drinking? Why is she making him food? Okay, so it's a celebratory night for him. Okay, she looks kind of upset. Why is she not celebrating with him? You know, like all these different things. And as he's going on this rant and really just talking about himself the whole time, and she's, you know, outside smoking and not paying any attention yet to the fact that the person who he just spent this night with clearly seems to have something wrong, I think just tells you so much about how maybe their relationship works. You know, maybe there's a lot of this kind of, when he goes on his longer rant, you know, you kind of see that as well, when she's kind of, but she's more amused by it at that point. But I think in this beginning part, I think it just serves as a way to understand what kind of people they are. And the fact that she does just not say much. I love sometimes not having any dialogue at all. I think that was one of my favorite parts almost about Euphoria, was the fact that most of it was voiceover, not because I just don't like learning lines. I actually really enjoy learning lines, but there's so much that can be said without words. And, you know, Sam and I both kind of appreciate that and loved finding those moments with Rue where, you know, something would happen or she would be thinking about something and you would just kind of hold on her and see an entire, you know, mood shift or train of thought or whatever it may be kind of pass through her without any words at all. And I have so much fun with those moments where you just have to figure out what the character is saying without anything at all.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with my guest. I think it's pronounced Sam Levinson, writer director of Malcolm Marie and his stars and Zendaya's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. This movie isn't called Another Happy Day, although I guess ironically it could be. It's called Malcolm Marie. Its writer and director Sam Levinson is here along with his star Zendaya. And Sam, I guess one of the things, as she was talking, Z was talking during before the break, I guess the thing about with your work is people trying to find out ways to work out their anxiety and their fear and how they verbalize that. And you come up with this interesting balance for that where you've cast Zendaya so often as an observer to this. And I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, those sort of constantly sort of opening states of, I guess, fear in your work and then having her play against them.
I like the idea of anxiety as a genre that I think I'm always trying to sort of play with. And that I think is just like a direct result of just having too much anxiety in life that I need to put it into something or else it's unbearable. And also try to find the kind of the peace from the anxiety. And I think I maybe do that through Z's character. It's also Z's a very calm and even keeled person in general. And I'm sometimes quite envious of her stability. And since I'm usually writing parts of myself and putting them into characters that she's playing, it feels just like a good, healthy balance.
and see if you don't mind weighing in on this, because again, between these two pieces, I mean, the world is kind of falling apart in some ways, or at least in free fall, around these characters you're playing, and you're constantly assessing it. I mean, even with Marie, I mean, again, like I was saying, I think she's in two states of mind, where she's in the world and sort of standing outside of it. You know, so if you can talk about that a little bit, because I think it's really interesting the way physically, I think Rue and Marie physically are two very different people. We can sort of see Marie's steeliness. We can see exactly how much she wants to let out when she's letting it out. We can see, by the way, she's standing away from Malcolm so often when she's at the beginning of the movie, she's talking to him. When she gets close to him, she knows how to play him. And Rue is somebody who's very different, who's much more vulnerable, but still these are people who are watching what's going on around them.
It's interesting because I guess, like, you know, I often say that, like, you know, both Rue and Marie are like equal parts Sam and myself, but they're entirely different characters. Marie has the words for her, what she's feeling. Rue hasn't gotten that far. She can't explain anything that's going on inside of her, but Marie can quite eloquently say exactly how she feels. And she has no fear in doing that. I've always felt that. I think even in the way Sam wrote, like I said, he would write 10 to 15 pages and he'd call me after. And the way that I ended up recording all of those conversations that we had because I wanted to capture exactly the way Sam was reading Marie the first time he was reading her, because it just felt very, very sure of herself. Like she just knew exactly what she was saying and why she was saying it. And that is just the way that Sam just naturally flowed when he was, you know, reading Marie's lines. I was like, that's it. That's her. She's already there. You know, she was already kind of coming to life. I just got to kind of, I would play that over and over, those over again. And it would help me not only memorize my lines, but memorize that cadence, which I felt was just kind of perfect. I don't know. It just felt like Marie already kind of existed. And so when we were putting it up on its feet, I think there was also something to be said of, you know, I'm in a dress for the first half of the movie. And then for the rest of it, which was also a conversation that all of us had, I'm in, you know, underwear and a tank top, which was a personal choice. I wanted to stay that way. I know Sam was like, you sure you don't want to? And I was like, no, I want to have this fight this way on purpose. You know, I felt like it gave me an extra kind of challenge to have a toughness with absolutely no armor on at all. And I think that it's not easy to kind of go toe to toe. I mean, like you kind of say it metaphorically as well, with her in the bathroom and literally nothing, you know, but she has to take it and she has to be, you know, tough when she's in literal vulnerable position, you know.
But I also think to what you're saying too, I mean, she can clearly hear him because she's talking to her, but she's saying, I can't hear you. I mean, she's even sort of like starting something there, being that far away from I don't mean to equate these characters, Rue and Marie, but she has a real sense of control. I mean, because she's had to fight to get to where she is.
Exactly. It's interesting because Malcolm ends up kind of saying that to her, you know, it's about control. And I think at the end of the day, it kind of plays into, I think, a fear that we all have in a different way, is just of wanting to be needed or wanting to be wanted or needed by somebody. That fear of like maybe abandonment or not being good enough or whatever those things. I think they all, her need for control stems from her plethora of insecurities that she, you know, she doesn't allow to be shown. And I think her way of kind of covering that is just to be overly controlling of situations in her own kind of way, where it's not necessarily in your face. And that's why I think it's interesting a lot of times where we get the feedback of, you know, Malcolm is so horrible, he's this villain. And, you know, he is to a degree, but, you know, she is manipulative in her own way. And she is manipulating the situation how she wants it too. And I think that's why the relationship is so conflicting for me, even now. You know, I can't really tell if they're good for each other or not. I really don't know. I really don't have the answer. Like I go back and forth every day, you know, it's like, I want them together. And then I'm like, no, absolutely. These two people should, this is not how relationships should be. This is not how it should go, you know? And it's tough for all of us, 'cause we went back and forth every day. Like, oh, we just love them together. So romantic. And it's like, oh my God, these people get out of the house, like run away, you know? And then it's like, oh, he's the villain. No, she's the villain, you know? And that I think is what's so exciting about the whole thing.
That's so funny. You talk about it and people wanted to make it reductive because people do want to see a good guy and bad guy in relationships. But it's really a movie to me, and that's why we were talking about this a little bit in the first half. The act breaks are really about the changing emotional states these characters have. And the real power comes for me, and I wanted to get you to respond to this a little bit, Sam, is Marie's ability to get Malcolm into her state. And it's like, it's a really interesting sort of subtextual thing that's happening all the time about the way she comes into rooms, about the way she's talking to him. He's trying to sort of plant this kind of territorial flag and say he's king of the mountain, but she's taken rid of the lay of the land in a way that he hasn't. And what this does for me, because there's the emotional state shifts so often, is in effect, you've written a bunch of different people into characters, because usually you have a lot of characters in your work, and this time you boiled it down.
Right. You know, just from an outside perspective, watching these two, I was fascinated by the idea that they could fix this whole evening if they just happened to be in sync, but they never are. When Marie comes out of the bath and she sits down next to Malcolm, and you could see that she kind of wants to put this to rest, you know, the argument, and she starts playing that Dionne Warwick song, Get Rid of Him. I just imagine this scene of she's looking at him, hoping that he looks at her and they can both laugh at the sort of absurdity of the song and the moment, but they just keep missing each other's cues. I don't know. I mean, I agree with Z in the sense that I don't know how I feel about their relationship. There's days in which I love them and days in which I don't. But I also think part of just the dynamic of it that I was interested in sort of exploring was kind of flipping the normal sort of gender roles of the characters, where Marie has a little bit more of what you would think of as like a quintessentially sort of male stoicism. And Malcolm, on the other hand, is a bit more emotional / hysterical in that sort of stereotypical female way. She's just sort of watching him kick and scream and, you know, and move around the house. And she's just slowly kind of pulling out the threads of his ego or the ideas that he stakes until she can bring him a little bit back down to earth to essentially what matters, which is life and the people that you love, because that's ultimately what is the basis of his work in many ways.
Again, I really think you guys set this movie up in so many ways in the first 5 or 6 minutes that we know who and what they are. Z mentioned that this idea of power, and also she's standing there in the front of the frame smoking while he's dancing behind her and not paying attention. And to your point, Sam, we can really see that they're literally not picking up each other's cues there. It's like they're in their own heads in two different movies.
Right. Well, what's good about it is, like, I think it allows Malcolm's celebration to have a slight kind of dark humor to it or absurdism, because you know it's going to come crashing down. So he can walk around and he can talk about all these things and you're going, uh-oh, just wait, just wait. And I think that's part of, I think, what we were trying to create. And it's part of why I think we had, just even when we were shooting it, that sequence, that scene that you're talking about, we shot the first day. We shot the whole thing, you know, on a dolly. You know, Marcel, our cinematographer, and I had a very kind of formalist idea of how we were going to attack this opening scene. Shot the whole day. And on the car ride home, we were like, it doesn't work. We're missing something. We got to throw it out. Now, mind you, at that time, it was a 10-day shoot. So we're going to throw out the first day. Second day, we arrive. We're convinced that we know that the way to shoot this now is handheld. And it's going to be messier. It's going to have more life in it. We shoot the entire day that way. The end of the day, I look at Marcel. I kind of shake my head. He shakes his head. I know we haven't figured it out yet either. I don't want to say anything to Z at that point in time, because they just did, you know, probably 80 takes over the past 48 hours of this opening scene. And I'm about to tell her that I'm going to throw it out. So I'm like, great work. Let's go back. Let's all go home for the night. We go home. We show up the next day and we decided to just move along to the next scene, which was essentially Marie, you know, she's in the bathroom there and we have that tracking shot outside that's sort of following him as he's dancing around. And it's a bit more of an objective sort of perspective of their relationship and what's happening. And suddenly I realized, well, this is it. This is the shot. This tells the whole story, because you can see her in one world and him in another world inside of the world of this film. And I think we had an hour until the sun, you know, was going to come up, and And we said, all right, let's go for it. Let's try to nail this in one take. And it was ultimately the third take that made it work. But I think that that's what, you know, it was always that thing throughout shooting. And thankfully, you know, Z wasn't just an actor in this process, but a true collaborator and producer, and same with JD. So there was a certain comfort that we're all in this together and we're going to figure this out as a family. And so they allowed for that kind of freedom to explore on our end, and I think on their end too, as performers.
I have a last question for you guys. I know we're running out of time here and you're on the clock. And Z, I'll start with you. You're talking about going back and forth between how you feel about these characters' relationship and how you feel about these characters. So today, given where we are, how do you feel about them now?
I still don't know. I still have no idea. I think that's the beauty of it. I think the beauty of it is that I have one feeling one day, and then once talking to, you know, another person who's seen it, I'll have another feeling, you know, and then somebody might bring something up and I'll be like, you know what? You're totally right. I'm back on his side. And then I'll talk to someone else. You know what? Bullshit. Yes. She won, you know, so it just depends how they interact with each other. It's like, sometimes, you know, I'm like, you know, there's no one better for them than each other. There's something about the chaos that just works for them. And then I'm like, no, this is not how you're supposed to have a relationship. Like, this is not how people are supposed to function together. Like, this is not healthy, you know? And so I don't know. I think that is quite literally, like, the beauty of this relationship in this movie, and what I'm so proud of is that it's a dialogue that really never ends. You know, it's, you don't leave just feeling one way about it. I get excited when I show it to my friends and family and they're like, oh my gosh, that was a lot to process. Like, they want to watch it again and pick up more the second time. You know, that's, I think, the reason we all do what we do, you know, is because we want people to think about it when they leave. We want people to have these discussions with their loved ones and hopefully leave feeling like they need to go say thank you to somebody, you know, or just show their appreciation for the people in their lives, you know. Hopefully those that's what comes out of it. But yeah, I'm still undecided, but I think that's a good thing.
Wow, if you can show this movie to your family more than once, that means you have a very healthy family. Sam, let me ask you, how do you feel about these guys today? Because in effect, they're both you.
I'm with Z on this. I can't ever take sides with characters, I feel like, because it's just not how I look at the world. It's not how I look at people. I can always sort of understand where someone's coming from. And if I don't understand, then I want to understand. Ultimately, you know, I'm not a relationship counselor, you know, so I can't make any suggestions as to what they should do. But I think I think what Z said was really kind of beautiful, which is I think that every person has someone in their life that they're extremely grateful for. And the acknowledgement of that person is, I think, integral to the way we communicate in general, that there needs to be a level of love and respect. And that's ultimately, I think, all I really care about, is that we see human beings for who they are in all of their complexity and with all their flaws and all their beauty.
We could clearly talk about this for a lot longer, but we're out of time. I can't thank you guys enough. Zendaya, who's the Marie of Malcolm Marie, and Sam Levinson, who's the director and writer of Malcolm Marie. You guys, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Elvis. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, of course. Our recording engineer at KCRW also mixes the show. It's Cat Yours, edited by Rebecca Mooney. To better days, everybody. I'm not a relationship counselor either. It's the treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.